Welcome back to State of the News on WFPL. I'm Rick Howlett. Well, this Sunday marks the 77th anniversary of the birth of Elvis Presley. In honor of the King's birthday, we bring you Searching for Blelvis. 2 years ago, radio producer Sam Greenspan set out to find Blelvis, the Black Elvis, sometimes elusive entertainer on the streets of Washington, D.C., who says he knows all the words to every song Elvis Presley recorded. Here's an excerpt from Sam Greenspan's radio story.
If you've never met Blelvis, the Black Elvis of D.C., it would be impossible to pick him out in a crowd. He doesn't look like Elvis, he doesn't dress like Elvis, and he only sort of sounds like Elvis. Blelvis is more of an Elvisologist. He knows the words to every Elvis Presley song ever written. Through the years, Blelvis has become a fixture around Northwest D.C., and once you start asking around, it seems like everyone has a Blelvis story.
You hear about him first. And then eventually you run into him, and it's like seeing some rare bird.
Kind of came up next to me and started walking along with me and introduced himself as Blelvis, the Black Elvis.
And then you run into him again, and then run into him again.
And I heard footsteps behind me on the street late at night. Of course, it's just Blelvis. And he gives me a friendly, "Don't worry, baby, it's just me, Blelvis."
Eventually you get to know him. He turns up at the most unexpected times. One time he showed up here at like around Christmas time. With a big box of Hershey's chocolate, and was just like, "This is for you. It's a Christmas gift." Or as an Elvisologist, I hope he'll take it as a compliment that there's apparently a growing pool of Blelvisology.
The best way to meet Blelvis is by a chance encounter on the street. He'll come up to you and offer to sing an Elvis song, any Elvis song. If you don't know one, he'll ask you for a word and then make word associations until he finds a song that fits. And he wouldn't deny you the pleasure of donating money towards his services. But one of the first things you learn about Blelvis is that he's never around when you're looking for him. Still, if you can't find him performing his routine around Adams Morgan or the Wonderland Ballroom, you can always find him on YouTube.
We have this week Blelvis, who is a person who claims to know every word of every song Elvis ever sang.
This is from Rock and Roll Psychosis. It's a local student-produced talk show. It's 1987, and Blelvis looks like he's in his 20s. He's sporting a pompadour, sideburns, and a burgundy members-only jacket.
And you make the claim that you know every single word of every single song that Elvis ever did. Now, that's 1,000 songs. Am I correct in assuming?
Well, actually, it's 1,112.
And you know every word?
Yeah, every word to every song ever recorded by Elvis.
Yoga is as yoga does.
Oh, that was from Easy Come, Easy Go. Yoga is as yoga does. There's no in-between. You're either with him all the way, or you split the scene.
For decades, journalists have placed Blelvis in the media spotlight. He's been profiled by TV crews, bloggers, newspapers. And in June of 2009, I too started looking for him, and began what became a citywide search for Blelvis.
Searching for you.
I think in some ways he's built up such a mythic stature in DC folklore that you want to believe that there are, you know, Blelvical superpowers, but I think that he has a sticking power in people's minds, and so he makes you you want to believe in him.
Monica Hesse writes for the style section of the Washington Post. She wrote a feature on Blelvis in 2007 and might be the city's leading Blelvisologist.
I think that it's easy when you meet him for one night to think, either that he's just a figure of fun, that he's, you know, there for your entertainment, or it's easy to think that he's, a tragic fallen hero. And he's neither of those things. He's a man, he's a person, and he's a very flawed person. Andrew's obsession with Elvis is one of the things that contributed to his marriage failing.
Okay, today is July 24th, and got a call that Blelvis is in Mount Pleasant. Okay, so we're just about to cross Park Road on 18th Street.
But yeah, it was just funny.
Blelvis. Hey, you're Blelvis. I'm Sam.
Ah!
You're a hard man to find.
Well, here I am.
Andrew tells me that he and Elvis Presley were born on the same day, but that Blelvis was born on the day that Elvis died.
The day that Elvis died, August 16th, 77, I was 11, almost 12, and I'm an average black kid in my room listening to average station that a 12-year-old would listen to. Never play Elvis, of course. All of a sudden, Elvis, the king is dead, and they start playing Elvis music. So I get up, I turn to my second favorite station, Elvis music. Now I'm getting pissed. I get up to turn the third time, You're So Square, Baby, I Don't Care comes on. So I'm about, and it comes on, I'm like, okay, that sounds bad. Anyway, I end up sitting down and listening to Elvis all night that night. I'm like, wow, he put out some good stuff. A couple days later, I got my allowance, and I bought my first Elvis album, blah, blah, blah. There's an old Southern expression, whole hog or nothing at all.
What does that mean?
It means whatever you get into, go all the way with it or don't do it. Whole hog.
Blovis says he's going to run to the store for some cigarettes and tells me to wait. Even though it's the end of July, when he comes back, he's carrying a snow shovel. And even though it's almost midnight, he says he needs to return it to someone. He disappears into an alley next to the stoop where we had been talking. I don't see him again.
The fact that we keep wanting to tell his story says something more about us than it does about him. It's a worthwhile story to continue telling, but I think you're not the last journalist to do it. And I think that the interesting thing is that once you get swept up in Blovis, you become a part of the story too. All of that means is that the next time someone does this story, they'll be calling you. And, you know, thus his legend expands in ever-widening circles.
I know I'd go from rags to riches.
For Metro Connection, I'm Sam Greenspan.
If you would only say you can.
And radio producer Sam Greenspan joins us now from Washington. Sam, welcome to the program.
Great to be here. Thanks.
So how long did it take you to track down Blovis and meet him face to face?
Well, this was back in the summer of 2009, I believe, if I have to think back now. But I spent the summer trying to find him, and I guess I started probably around maybe April, May, and finally found him right when I had given up, just towards the end of the summer.
So what was he like to interact with? Was it what you expected?
Well, you know, it's funny because when you spend so much time, you know, really searching for someone or really something, because, you know, in a sense, you know, Blovis or Andrew was kind of a concept at that point. When you finally, when I finally encountered him, I actually wasn't sure what to expect, because, you know, up until then, he just kind of been this idea. I mean, I had met him once, you know, when he did his Blovis routine to me on the street. That's how I found out about him. What I was struck by was that he is incredibly media savvy, that he, you know, at one point in the interview, he made a comment like, you know, oh, yeah, Elvis is, you know, the day that Elvis died was coming up. And he was like, yeah, I wonder what journalist is going to come after him and, you know, trying to find me this time. So I guess I was kind of, you know, grabbed by how aware he is of his presence within the, you know, the creative, the collective imagination of D.C.,
Now, for those who don't know, he's a street performer, or he comes up to folks and...
Well, he would call himself an Elvisologist. That is to say that he'll tell you that I think the number is 1,112 Elvis songs. Don't take his number, not mine. But that he has memorized all of every Elvis song ever recorded. And what he'll do is he'll come up to you and he'll say, you know, name an Elvis song. And you'll say, I don't know, maybe Blue Suede Shoes. You'll go, nah, too easy. And then... You know, if you don't know any, you know, deep cuts of Elvis tracks, he'll say, well, think of a word, and then he'll make a word association until you find something.
Wow.
Until he finds something, and then he'll sing you a line or two, and then, you know, wouldn't deny you the pleasure of donating towards his services.
He's
very quick, keen on saying that he's not a bum, that he's not a beggar, but that he is, you know, this roving scholar of all things Elvis.
Now, is he in full costume when he does this?
No, that's the thing. Just by looking at him, you have no idea that he'd have that he's anything other than just this guy, you know, walking around. Just if you see him up ahead, maybe just talking to people. But no, he doesn't look like Elvis. He doesn't dress like Elvis, and he only sort of sounds like Elvis, which I said in the piece. But he does not dress up in costume. He thinks of himself more. He's not an impersonator. He's more of a scholar of Elvis.
He uses the phrase in your piece, whole hog or nothing at all, to describe his embrace, you know, if you will, of Elvis.
Yeah, no, he really, you know, devoted his life in a lot of ways towards Elvis. Monica Hesse, the reporter who I interviewed for the piece and who, you know, wrote the a pretty in-depth profile of him. I think he named several of his children after Elvis. He had a whole bunch of Elvis memorabilia at his house. It was really, it was something that he was devoted his life to, was, you know, the acquisition of knowledge and things related to Elvis. I believe in Monica Hesse's article, one of his sons was quoted as saying that, you know, that I want to check this, but I think that what he said was that, you know, I didn't know that there was such thing as an Elvis toilet seat cover, but, you know, he had one.
Oh, wow. And there you have some discussion as to whether this kind of crosses the line from being an enthusiast to an unhealthy obsession.
Well, right, because, I mean, it was this obsession with Elvis that led to some of the struggles that he had in his life. I mean, he's grappled with addictions to, you know, drug and alcohol in the past. I would refer to the article that Monica Hesse had written, because she got, you know, more in depth with Blelvis, with Andrew, than I ever did. But I know that, you know, that his love, you know, going whole hog for Elvis Presley made it difficult for him to just, you know, to be Andrew.
Yeah. Did you test his knowledge of Elvis lyrics in your interaction with him?
During those months, I certainly should have been, boning up on my knowledge of Elvis to try to stump him. But, my knowledge of Elvis is scant. So, but what I do remember is the first time I saw him, he asked me, you know, he did the routine, you know, has all the songs, you know, what do you want to hear? And I said my favorite Elvis song is Bossa Nova Baby. And he was, I think, impressed by that, because that's, you know, a deeper cut. And he knew what year it was from, and I think it was in a movie, and he knew what movie it was. So he was impressed by that, and he sang this line. I said, no, that's not it. And then he's like, oh, well, you're thinking of this line. And then he sang the line, the opening line is what I was thinking. It was, take it easy, baby, I work all day, and my feet feel just like a... That was the line that I had in my mind. But when I started singing that, he was right there.
I think you mentioned it in the piece. Does he have a regular job?
Yeah, he was working. I'm forgetting if it was like a moving company or a maintenance company. This again was, you know, a few years ago. But he didn't sound like he was wealthy by any stretch of the imagination.
And like you said, it's been a couple of years since you talked to him. Is he still doing his Blelvis thing in Washington these days? Do you know?
Well, I mean, I moved to Baltimore last summer. So before that, so now I don't see him around because I'm not in D.C. that much. But I do. I had run into him a couple times. Actually, one thing that's not in the piece, that what immediately happened afterwards was the day before this airs. At the time, I was working a totally non-radio related job. I was to make this piece was, I'd go to work from like 9 to 7, get home, you know, eat dinner, and then work from like 9 p.m. to 4 a.m. the entire week, and by Thursday of that week, when the piece was finally done and I had slept like maybe, you know, 8 hours that whole week, I was, you know, feverish and kind of delirious. And then I get this phone call on my voicemail that's like, hey, this is Blelvis. You know, give me a call. And so I call him and he wants to meet me. And I'm really apprehensive about meeting because I'm, you know, afraid. I mentioned that his history of drug and alcohol struggle of abuse in the past. And so anyways, we meet at this this kind of upscale restaurant down the street from me, which I thought was kind of weird. I'm not sure why we're meeting there, but we meet there. And I thought he wanted to talk about the piece, but he actually started, you know, detailing some problems he was having in his life and was trying to, I think, get me to contribute towards his cause. And I had to tell him, you know, if my editor found out about this, I probably, you know, wouldn't be doing too much more work for the station. And so, you know, I think I let him down and, you know, felt I did, you know, I treated him to some takeout, but I felt that was the most that I could do at that point. Mm-hmm. But every now and then, you know, we'd get a phone call from him just telling me like, oh, hey, I'm going to go out to Adams Morgan and do the Blelvis routine. You're going to be around. And, And then, and also, I remember right after I did this piece, there were, you know, after not having, looking so hard to find him and not being able to find him, then he was like everywhere. I would just kind of be walking the street, down the street, and I'd see him on the other side, and he'd wave to me, and, you know, or he'd be coming out of a convenience store and I'd be going in, and everyone I talked to would be like, oh, yeah, I saw Blelvis the other day. and then there was this moment where, like, I think there was a change for him because people who told me they would see him would say, you know, previously he would walk up to someone and say, you know, hey, Elvis Presley had all these songs, I'm Blelvis, this is what I do, da-da-da-da. But after that, he would just, after the piece came out, he would just walk up to a group of people and say, hi, I'm Blelvis. And everyone was like, oh, it's Blelvis. And it was funny because he previously kind of gained this prestige for being this this interpretation of someone else.
Right.
But now he was sort of becoming legendary in his own right, if that makes any sense.
Well, you can hear the full piece, Searching for Blelvis, produced by Sam Greenspan, at our website, WFPL.org. And Sam, before we let you go, I know you have a podcast, unrelated podcast, called Whisper Cities. What's that about?
Whisper Cities is a podcast that I produce with a couple friends. It's about overlooked places and the people who find them. And I'm actually in the process of doing a Searching for Blelvis Revisited piece, which will be the next episode to air, and that's at whispercities.org.
All right, Sam Greenspan, radio producer based in Baltimore. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.